Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Answers from the Lab, where we share Mayo Clinic knowledge and advancements on the state of testing and science from laboratory leaders and the people who are making it happen behind the scenes. I'm Dr. Bobby Pritt, Chair of the Division of Clinical Microbiology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. With us today is Dr. Matt Binninger, a professor of laboratory medicine and pathology and a clinical virologist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Dr. Binninger is the medical director of the Clinical Microbiology Molecular Laboratory and the co-director of the Clinical Virology Laboratory. Dr. Binninger has led the development of many molecular tests for viral infections, including PCR and next-generation sequencing tests. And Dr. Binninger has also been a frequent guest on this show. So, Matt, thank you for coming back and joining us again today.
Yeah, you bet. Good to see you, Bobby.
We're here today to talk about an important infectious disease, a disease of antiquity, really, which is measles. And measles seems to be making the news again. Maybe we'll start with a basic question for our audience. Can you tell us about measles and why it's making the news?
Yeah, it's a disease that many over the last decade or two probably haven't thought much about. As you mentioned, this is a disease of antiquity that dates back to the first known accounts were in the 800s BC in the 9th century. And in the early 1900s, there were millions of people in the United States who would be infected with measles every year. In the 1950s, when there was good reporting for measles, it was estimated that somewhere between 3 and 4 million people were infected with measles each year, and an estimated 400 to 500 people in the country would die from measles. Now, fortunately, there in the 1960s became a very effective vaccine against measles. And so in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then the turn of the century, there was high use of measles vaccination, which caused a dramatic reduction in cases of measles. And so I would say most people, especially over the last few decades, have not thought much about it because there's been a near absence of this disease. It typically causes a cough, coryza, which is a runny nose, can cause conjunctivitis or redness of the eye, and then that well-known rash that can be throughout the body. But it can cause some other problems that I'm sure we'll talk about later that can result in some severe complications, including death.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see this back in the news again, since we had a pretty good control of it not too long ago. So can you tell us a little bit more about how contagious it is?
Yeah, it's actually considered one of the most contagious infectious diseases known to humankind. So I want you to imagine that there is a room with 100 people who have not been infected or vaccinated against measles. If one person with measles walked into that room, the virus is so contagious that at least 90 of those 100 would become infected, because that virus is contained in droplets that are suspended in the air for long periods of time. So it undergoes what's called airborne transmission, so highly contagious. And that's why we've seen this increase in cases, both in the U.S. and globally, because we've got this very contagious virus and declining rates of vaccination. As of mid-March, there's been over 60 cases of measles reported in the U.S. across 17 different states and jurisdictions. And this is a staggering number, but in 2022, the World Health Organization estimated that there were 9 million cases worldwide and 136,000 deaths. So wow. For a vaccine-preventable disease, measles is still causing a significant burden both worldwide and now here in the U.S.
Yeah, that's just very sad. And you mentioned something really important, that there are deaths from measles. And I don't think people realize that measles is a potentially deadly infection. Now, you've talked a little bit about some of the symptoms, but can you expand a bit more about the symptoms of measles and then what the potential complications are, including like how likely it is that death would result?
Yeah, you know, many people may think of measles as just this routine childhood illness that children would get if they're not vaccinated and maybe have symptoms for a few days and then get better. And while that occurs in many cases where children will develop, again, a cough, runny nose, conjunctivitis, this rash, unfortunately, there are complications associated with measles. And unfortunately, they most often occur in young children or in pregnant women or in those who have a compromised immune system. And so those complications can include ocular ear infections. So otitis media is very common. Some patients require hospitalization because their symptoms are so severe, including pneumonia. Some patients develop a central nervous system disease known as encephalitis. Pregnant women, if they become infected, can have a preterm birth that can put their newborn at risk. And then we talked about death. That occurs, unfortunately, in some cases, especially in young children. And then there's a well-known complication called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis that occurs generally between 7 and 10 years after an individual becomes infected with measles. And that's a very rare but fatal central nervous system disease that can affect some patients. So yes, in many individuals, the symptoms will come on and they'll get better over the course of several weeks. But there are patients who go on and develop these complications. And I'll go back to that in 2022, when we have a safe, effective vaccine, there were 136,000 deaths worldwide from measles, which is just a staggering number.
Yeah, that is staggering. And SSPE, as you mentioned, the subacute sclerosing panencephalitis, that's very scary because it's years after an infection, which may not have seemed like that important of an infection at the time, and then is fatal. Down the road, you can die from measles years after you initially acquired it. And that's right. just staggering as well. Yeah. So how do we in the laboratory test for measles? And when we give that result to the physicians or providers ordering the test, can they do anything for the patient in terms of treatment?
Yeah. Well, for years, there wasn't a test for measles. Back in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, physicians just became very good at recognizing measles based on the clinical presentation of the patient, the rash, the cough, and the runny nose. There are spots inside the mouth known as coplic spots that physicians would look for and be able to say, you have measles. But then with vaccination, we basically did not have cases of measles in the United States. And so there really wasn't a need for a good diagnostic test. There have been serology tests that can look for antibodies against measles, but those are mainly used to determine whether someone generates an immune response against vaccination. But because of this resurgence and the declining rates of immunization and these outbreaks of measles worldwide, some labs, including ours, have developed their own molecular PCR tests for measles. And so last year, we implemented a real-time PCR test that detects measles virus RNA in a throat swab or a urine sample collected from patients. So now we have a quick, very sensitive test that we can use to diagnose someone with measles. And unfortunately, those tests are becoming very important as more individuals are contracting this disease. So unfortunately, those who are diagnosed with measles, there's no specific antiviral therapy or treatment that we can give these patients to help get them through their symptoms. It's really just about supportive care for the individual. They're young, keeping them hydrated, giving them medications to reduce a fever, control pain, but there's, again, no antiviral. So patients who contract measles, if they develop symptoms, they get through that typically in several weeks, although some progress onto the complications that I mentioned earlier.
So it really sounds like prevention is key, especially for the complications that could be difficult to prevent. And we mentioned the vaccine. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and preventative techniques and maybe why people are not getting vaccinated?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. Because we don't have an effective treatment, prevention is key. And we have a very effective vaccine that has, in essence, for the last 50 years, resulted in a near absence of measles in the United States. The virus has continued to cause outbreaks and disease in other parts of the country where they don't have access to the vaccine. So in 2019, right before the COVID-19 pandemic, it was estimated that the national coverage with measles vaccination was about 95%. So very high, not 100, but very high. And what that does is it creates a situation known as herd immunity, where it makes it very difficult for an infectious disease to enter into a population and spread. In 2022, that level of national immunity dropped to 93%. So 2%, which maybe doesn't sound like a lot, but it opens up these gaps in that herd immunity, which has allowed the virus to enter into communities and spread more. And as we see that vaccination rate continue to decline, it gives the virus, which we talked about being highly contagious, more opportunities to enter into a population and spread. So extremely important to get those vaccination rates back up, because that is the best way that we can prevent measles virus from entering into communities and spreading.
Well, especially with children, given that the complications and severe disease are often in children. Yeah. And I believe the vaccination schedule starts quite young.
Yes, you're correct.
Can you touch a little bit on why people are choosing not to get vaccination? Is it just maybe misinformation about vaccines?
There's multiple factors involved. One is an absence of a disease creates a situation where you may think, I don't need to subject my child to a shot because there's no measles, mumps, rubella, chicken pox. So why would I put my young child through getting a shot when there's no disease? So there's that, which I get. I'm a father of children and you don't want to cause your kid any pain, but that's one factor. Two is I do think that the pandemic and the vaccine associated with COVID-19 resulted in a lot of misinformation in terms of negative consequences of vaccination. It's been shown over and over again that the vaccine for measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, they're very safe and highly effective. Definitely greater advantages than any downside of vaccination. Those are two really strong contributing factors against that kind of perceived absence has resulted in some complacency and the misinformation about links to autism, which have now completely been debunked in terms of vaccinations being associated with autism. So hopefully we'll be able to turn the tide in terms of accurate information, get those vaccination rates back up, and help to stem these outbreaks of measles, because it does pose a significant threat to the U.S. and nations worldwide. Last year, the WHO listed measles as an imminent public health threat to the world because of its contagiousness and its ability to spread and cause complications.
Yeah, that is really scary. Well, hopefully through podcasts such as this one and other sources of reliable information, we can get the word out and parents will think about vaccinating their children, and people who haven't been vaccinated will go and get vaccination since prevention is so key. And I also wanted to just call out that the test that you had developed is a laboratory developed test. Dr. Maurice and I have been talking a lot about FDA looming oversight, and there's no FDA approved PCR for measles. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, there's no commercial kit that labs can buy to diagnose measles. Over the last several decades, if a hospital or clinic saw a patient that they suspected measles, they would need to collect samples and generally send them to their state health lab. That's okay, but there's typically a delay, maybe a day, 2 days between when they would send the sample and the state lab would be able to receive that and get it tested. Well, for a virus that's so contagious, every hour that goes by without a diagnosis results in an increased ability to spread to others. And so labs having the capability to test on site, get a quick result to the physician, make a diagnosis is good not only for that one patient, but for everyone they might come in contact with.
Yeah, it really shows the power of lab-developed tests. Well, this has been a wonderful talk, review about a disease that really is posing an important problem in the U.S. It's always good talking with you, Matt. Thank you again for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Answers from the Lab. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and don't forget to tune in every Thursday and every other Tuesday.